Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are so excited to talk this episode of 47. I feel like I say that every week, but 47 is just like delivering on all cylinders this season, and it's so good.
It is. I mean, we have to join the hyperbolic chamber that is the entire Survivor community, just talking about how phenomenal this episode was. This was an episode that, as you were watching it, you were like, holy cow, this feels like such a well-edited episode. It felt so nice seeing and understanding everything that's going on at three different tribes. And yes, like the 90 minutes really played into it. But it's no surprise that Phil and Blake on Digging Deeper yesterday had to just talk about, is this one of the best pre-merge episodes in Survivor history? Because it's in really good contention to be so. It was such an entertaining episode. It kind of delivered on absolutely every front you wanted. We had new challenges in Survivor, despite it kind of being the same formula. We had just all of this social dynamic in the game going on so that we could figure out what was going on with it all. We could look at it, and then we had all that strategy that just, like, we had the base strategy with a strategy on top of it, with a strategy on top of it, and the strategy on top of it. I think, like, the best indication I have seen of this episode was, you know, that meme in the church where there's the people pointing the guns at each other,
and
then there's the sniper in the back, and it was just like, Saul, Rome, Keyshawn, Genevieve. And it's like, yeah, this is a perfect depiction of this episode. And it played out in such a wonderful way. It was so much fun to watch. I don't want to just be rambling on about it like everyone else was, but I'm really glad we get to kind of look at what moments in this really kind of reminded us of those episodes in Survivor's past this time. And just, like, how exactly this kind of fits into this, like, upper echelon of pre-merge episodes.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dive in, too. So if you are watching, listening, don't forget to subscribe, like the video, do all of the YouTube things, become a patron, because this week is a big one, because we are talking Winners at War. I'm wearing my Cele buff in honor of the episode that we're watching on the Patreon, which is Quick on the Draw, episode 6. All right, let's get into it. We are talking our outwit moments, which is...
It's kind of a hard one to summarize. It's
hard to describe.
Like, it's a little tough to describe, but essentially it's this idea of, like, turning the plan on the person who proposed the plan.
Right. So, like, this is the whole Genevieve and Keyshawn of it all, where Keyshawn proposes a plan to Genevieve, and Genevieve is like, I'm going to turn this on you and get Keyshawn out. Mm-hmm. So with that, we have this Winners at War episode, and this is where Denise turns the tides on Sandra. Sandra proposes an alternate plan, so it could not be Denise going home. She trades fire tokens for an immunity idol that Sandra had that would only be good for one more tribal council. And Sandra concocts this plan, just don't touch me or Kim, doesn't matter who you want, if you want Tony to go, if you want Jeremy to go, whatever you want to do, Denise. And so Denise takes that advantage and then proposes, like, a counter offer of, all right, one token now and then one token after, just so I know it works. So this just was such a brilliant move and plan, if it had worked out, because that could have been, like, something for Sandra to keep going with Denise, but have a little bit, like, of an inside scoop, so to speak. But it was even more brilliant by Denise, and I can see a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I think a lot of the similarities come down to the fact that when we look at how Genevieve executes this move, and it's really framed in the episode, like, Rome telling her she was the backup plan was the reason why that the vote flipped. Based on Keyshawn's exit interview and everything, it doesn't seem like that's actually the case. It was more just he doesn't think that was the case. He thinks it was more that he was just playing too hard, and Genevieve just kind of realized, you know what, Keyshawn's running everything. This entire plan just benefits Keyshawn so much more than it benefits me. So I need to do something that takes a hold of the game. And I think that's exactly what Denise realizes in this Winners at War situation.
She even has that confessional where she's like, Sandra is in control of the game, and I have to play, like, I need them more than, you know, they need me, and just, like, be in the putty in their hands, basically. And so she plays into this so beautifully, where Genevieve, I think, is, we visibly see it and Keyshawn believes it, but I feel like Denise has a little bit more like, oh, you guys are the best, or like kind of where Genevieve is just like, yeah, I'm going with the plan. It's a little bit more like stoic, where Denise is really like hitting them with it. I feel, I don't know what the quality is to describe
it, but it feels like it's the difference between a therapist and a corporate lawyer. But that's what it feels like. And it's just, I think it's that empathetic response from Denise, where she really plays on the emotions of like all that DeKal tribe, rather than Genevieve, who is just kind of like, again, even if we look at the like brilliant edited version of like Keyshawn's floating heads around Genevieve, she's like piecing everything together.
That was like uncomfortable.
No, it was like the perfect level of corn for this episode. It was like really, it helped cement this episode as like a perfect episode of Survivor, with that little bit of cheese you need for reality TV. But when we like compare those moments, right, like Denise is really playing on this emotional side of the game, but has those strategic moments, and Genevieve we're just seeing as like this very strategic player in this moment, where she's like, no, I'm not going to be bossed around. Like, there was an instance where this probably made sense for a lot of it, right? But and given time, Genevieve was able to come to the conclusion, Rome leaving is not good for her game.
No, it's not, because that does leave her on the outs. That because Rome is her pocket, where like Teenie and Keyshawn are a duo, and then they pick up Saul and she's gone. Like, there's no guarantee that those two are going to pick up Genevieve when Genevieve had like her name was thrown out by Keyshawn, and she was one of the options for Asia's boot.
Well, and this puts Genevieve in a power position, right? Because now Genevieve and her very tight ally, who she just told about an attempted blindside against, who worked with in order to operate all this. Yes, exactly, Barr. I think that's exactly the case. She is a lawyer. She went full lawyer mode. And you have to watch out for that. But because of that, she's positioned herself as the duo in a four with, yes, there's a chance that Saul and Teeny get together. So at worst, what, you go to Rux in this four, right? Like, there's no easy way for her
but
to be
there's
the person.
There's some drama going on at the journey, or like at the mat. So there might be a swap. True.
Yeah, it looks like, and if you are to believe everything Phil has been saying and everything he has talked about, it seems like there's only two stations at that challenge there. So take that as you will.
Swap the two tribes is monumental.
It would be. Like, but what happens here, though, and why I think this Winners at War moment is so similar to what we saw, is that analysis of who works best for your game. Obviously, with hindsight, we can look at this entire situation and say, Denise, you should have gotten Tony out when you had the chance.
Right.
But I think there's a lot more concern, especially when we look at Sandra's confessional about, and it's hard comparing things to Winners at War, because as Wendell says in that episode of Winners at War, this is a season of pre-existing relationships and friendships. And Sandra has a confessional before they go to tribal council, like, I need to get by, and I just have, you know, I know people on the other side, and I have tighter connections with people on the other side. So I feel pretty safe no matter what. I don't need these big threats like Tony set things he needs in order to stay in the game to protect himself. And because of that, Denise gets this opportunity to take out Sandra, who is probably in a better position than Tony. And again, it kind of just speaks to Tony's game in Winners at War and how underestimated he was, because he seems like such an obvious player. And like, again, coming off his Game Changers game, there's always that idea that, you know, everyone's going to want to go after Tony eventually. But this
also, like, that Game Changers game really like shot Tony's like threat level down. Plus, he was so scattered in this episode as well. Like, Sandra is kind of more the clear target here, where like she is the more strategic backbone as of right now.
Which, and this is going to sound please do not spit roast me for saying this. Very similar to the dynamics we saw on Lavo this week with Rome as like the Tony position, right? Mm-hmm. Rome is that erratic player. You're not sure what he's doing. No, he's not out there building spy shacks and whatnot, but he still is that player that is a little up in the air and you're a little concerned about it all times. You're not really 100% sure what he's going to do. And Keyshawn was that incredibly strategic player who was clearly very personable, was able to make connections with people quite easily, and could have found himself in a Sandra spot. And yeah. I don't know what's scarier to have someone compared to, a Tony or a Sandra.
Yeah, exactly. Well, your moment is a little different, and neither Tony nor Sandra.
No, neither Tony nor Sandra. I want to take us to San Juan del Sur, and this is a kind of a different situation. It's similar, but it's in that pre-merge section of San Juan del Sur, and it's the John Rocker boot, because there's a lot that goes into this boot. Obviously, this is the same episode where Natalie, like, just goes scorched earth on John Rocker at the challenge, and John Rocker makes that terrible, terrible comment about, if you weren't a woman, I would lay you down or whatever, lay you out. Terrible comment and everything.
Was that also when he did the duel, too, against Julie in this episode?
I don't think so. I think the duel in this episode is Keith and Wes.
And Wes. Okay.
But the point being is, like, John Rocker, this is like very much the John Rocker fall episode. And it's like, again, Natalie calling him out for his former bigotry and stuff like that. And John Rocker, I think it's kind of hard to remember if you haven't watched San Juan del Sur in a while. And I get it, it was 10 years ago. So it's tough. But John Rocker was in a pretty demanding control of that tribe and like really leading the boys there. And they were looking to get rid of the girls and everything. John came up with this plan. Like, they were telling, I can't remember who the decoys were, but the plan was the boys were all going to vote out Baylor. Mm-hmm. And then Josh comes along and Josh is just like, hey, John then tells Josh about his idol. And like, yep. This is kind of where the difference happens here, because this is hunting out this advantage here, but it's also getting rid of this person who like seemingly has control. John Rocker feels more like a Rome than a Keyshawn with like personality wise, mm-hmm. but control wise was definitely more in this Keyshawn role on this tribe. And he tells Josh about the idol, and Josh is like, you know what, with everything going on, like, first off, John's like kind of directing us what to do. He's bossing us around and kind of has that like Genevieve moment of like, I don't want to be told what to do this entire time. He knows there's an idol and it's like, well, we can get this idol. There's no way John thinks we're flipping on him. And like, there's just a bunch of turmoil going on with John. So if anything happens here, we can just get ahead of that and not have to worry about how that could play negatively against us in the future.
Yeah, it also, because of the blood versus water element, because everything that happened at the challenge, they just like kind of nipped everything in the bud and it won't hurt them with Julie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it was smart planning. And like, Survivor is a tough game. It is not easy. I know we can all like sit here as coaches on our couch. Not the player, but like actual like sports coaches and like think we can do things better, like direct these players as we're watching them and stuff. But it's hard to navigate these situations because you don't know how much pressing too hard falls back on you. We had a confessional from Genevieve tonight or this week saying, hey, like, I'm going to bat for Rome. But I have to realize that the more I do that, the more like there's potential for it to fall back on me. Right. And Genevieve showed that foresight to have that idea. Keyshawn kind of ignored that foresight. Again, at least as far as the edit shows us, right? To the point where he pushed too hard. And that made it so that someone realized how hard he was pushing. And I think that's exactly what John Rocker did in San Juan del Sur. He pushed too hard. And it's very different because John Rocker and Keyshawn are like complete opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to character for the most part. Keyshawn is this like nerdy looking doctor, and John Rocker is this alpha bro pro athlete, like total opposite sides of the spectrum. So it's really weird to kind of compare them in this position, but that's kind of the cool thing about Survivor, is that everything from the real world kind of gets thrown out, and it's the island world mm-hmm. that really matters.
Yeah. I mean, it is very interesting to compare the two of them as like similar in this sense, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So our outplay moment is one of the best rewards you can get in Survivor, and you get the biggest turmoil from this reward. It's the chickens. We are using the chickens as our outplay this time around. And John, I think you have one of the best here for chickens.
Well, I mean,
we have this confessional in the episode, or like, I think it's in a confessional, where they're like, do we kill the chicken? Do we keep it for eggs? This is going to be the biggest talk throughout camp.
Well, it was that conversation between like Sierra and Sam about how Sam was like, I want to kill the chicken. I'm going to eat this protein right now. And Sierra mm-hmm. was saying, no, like I have wineries and I like chickens. Like, please don't. Like, please don't kill them. Like, we don't need to kill them. We can be nice to them. And then like they give us eggs and stuff. First, I want to acknowledge, though, before getting into my moment, because I do agree, like, I have this early moment that, like, it's pretty big when it comes to our chicken debate. But this is the first time in the new era we've had a chicken reward.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had chickens in the new era yet. And
we haven't?
We have not.
That's crazy.
I don't know if it was because Survivor was like, hey, like, 26 days, we don't need chickens. Or if it was like, man, these chickens just, like, automatically give, like, a C award to someone. So maybe, like, chill out. I don't think it's a coincidence that the season after Sia announces she's not giving no awards anymore, there's chickens all of a sudden on Survivor. But I want to take us all the way back. And I'm not going to go back to the first chicken reward, because I think the first chicken reward in Borneo was pretty straightforward.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Exactly. They were going to eat those chickens no matter what. But I want to take us to our first real debate about what to do with chickens, and that is in Australian Outback. And it's when, McKenna, you have to help me, which of the tribes was it?
Kucha.
Wins the chicken rewards. Kimmy's there, and Kimmy's, of course, a vegetarian. And Scoopin', just like, yeah, we're going to kill these chickens, we're going to eat them. It's going to be great. I want this meat. And Kimmy's like, how about we don't? And it really led into this debate. And then obviously, you know, Scoopin' goes off and kills a wild pig. But it's just this weird, it's that weird dichotomy. And they also get like the chicken feed, which became like a staple to their diet after that. weird concept, you know, just eat the bird food, but that's fine.
It was like corn.
I know. But in the end, like, is this debate of, like, do we save the chickens? Do we get rid of the chickens? Like, what's the usefulness of these chickens? And even on X this week in results of these chickens being rewarded, you had survivors saying, just kill the chickens. They're not going to lay eggs. Get them. And you had Omar responding with, like, no. If they're, like, in a stress-free environment, they're going to lay plenty of eggs. So
right.
Even former survivors can't agree what the best approach to these chickens are. So when we saw it this first time in Outback, it's kind of framed in this way of, oh, look at Kimmy. She's like overly sensitive about keeping these chickens alive. But maybe she had a point.
But okay, there is something very different in Outback's chickens versus these chickens. I felt like the production wanted them to eat the chickens. And in Outback, they wanted them to have eggs and like build, you know, the build the society. Now you have livestock kind of thing. But because they gave like actual coops and pens and things, this was just like some bamboo strips tied together, and like, this is your chicken cage, and then one escapes. So like, we're not gonna get ideal chicken conditions to lay eggs with them in this. You're gonna have to build them something that they can't get out of. Like, just kill the chickens at this point.
Couldn't you
just for the conditions that they're in?
Couldn't you mark the chicken it though, and just tie them to something and have them free roam?
You could if they wanted to try that.
But I mean, I don't know. Maybe these people aren't big Ko Rong fans. Maybe that's just what it comes down to. They didn't know how to approach it.
Listen. Oh wait, no. I don't know about Yellow. Cause never mind. I was like, Rome's all about the specialist. He's got to know about.
We're talking about the Gata tribe here, and
yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure one of them has to be a Michelle stand too.
Hmm. Yeah, I just like this debate between killing the chickens and not, like, then Kimmy would go away when they're killing the chickens. So I wonder if we see next episode them going, like, someone who didn't want, like, Sierra didn't want the chickens to be killed, like, going off while, like, they kill the chicken and, you know, deal with all that. Mm-hmm. But my example it's a little bit funnier. I'm going to Kageon here, and this is when the beauty tribe was asking, do we need to keep the rooster alive to make them lay eggs? The answer is no. They give you the rooster for like a free chicken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And granted, that was a rooster and three egg laying hens. So it was the combination of three egg laying hens and a rooster. I don't know if I disappeared or McKenna disappeared. Chat, if you could tell me, that would be awesome. McKenna's computer died, he told me. I'm sure McKenna will be here back in a second. But anyways, as I was saying, the inclusion of a rooster in the Kageon reward, in addition to the three egg-laying hens, is just so that there is that instant gratification. And there's no dilemma. That's what's so interesting about production only giving them hens in this situation. All of a sudden, it kind of fits into this new era scheme a lot better of, okay, you have three hens. They have a purpose they can do. They can lay eggs. And for anyone who doesn't know, because I had to Google this on Wednesday, in ideal conditions at their most egg-laying fertility and everything, the average hen will lay approximately 6 eggs a week, so almost one a day. So between 3 hens, you get 18 eggs a week. That's a pretty substantial day. And now I know there's some arguments that like the meat goes a little further, maybe not like in longevity, but like it fills you up with more protein. I just think when you are on a diet of like mostly rice, although I guess they don't even have rice, so it doesn't really matter because it's the new era. But I think just like splitting an egg in the morning, you can stretch eggs so far. Like just scrambling an egg, I don't know, I guess hollow out a coconut shell, like scramble it up. But it's so much more efficient to use the eggs. But I get it. And like McKenna was saying, right, like, how do you get these chickens into a stress-free environment where they're actually laying eggs? And I think that is why a lot of the crux of the argument on X this week was about survivors being like, hey, so these chickens aren't going to lay eggs, because from their experience, they don't. When we're looking at this Kageon situation, I think it's so funny that the beauty tribe doesn't really seem to know the answer to this, when the beauty tribe probably has the people who live on farms and things like that on it. So they, hypothetically, they should be the most well-positioned tribe in order to know what is going on with these chickens and how, you know, hens lay eggs and roosters do or do not incite them to do so. So when you look at it that way, it's just this, it's so funny, the circumstances of it all. I don't think there was a better tribe for these particular chickens to end up with than the beauty tribe.
Plug in your computers, kids, when you go live on a podcast. but I don't know what John just said, but probably agree with it. Yes, one of the standouts to me, you know, for chicken rewards is Kageyan. That was the first thing that came to my mind. Borneo, just because it's the first one with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have Shambo, what John said in Australia, and then Mark. Like, there are a handful of chicken rewards that are just like, all right, I know what goes on here. And then this Kageyan moment is just such a levity to something like, don't kill the chickens. They're like, which one do we kill first?
Yeah, it's just a different take. And it does kind of feel more like that Borneo situation than it does any other of these chicken situations, right? Where it feels like a lot of people are like, the idea of eggs makes a lot of sense. We should keep them around. But they don't know how to take care of the chickens.
Right. So I don't know if you went into this, but typically in Survivor, we've gotten 3 egg-laying hens and a rooster.
Yeah, now, I did talk about that.
Okay.
So
like having, I feel like any reward, and it was just, it felt most noticeable with this reward that it's gotten like so different where like, you'd get the 3 egg-laying chickens, the rooster, and if there's a second tribe, they'd get a dozen eggs. Mm-hmm. This time you get 3 chickens with like that whole social aspect of it. And then you get 6 eggs between the 5 people. And it's like such a, I think they're really, really harping on this starvation aspect that we don't see or like don't get because they're offering more for a reward. Like obviously 4 chickens is like a big discrepancy between a dozen eggs, but 3 chickens and 6 eggs is, I feel like, even worse.
Yeah, I didn't even think about like the eggs being cut in half. That's a substantial downside. McKenna, one of the things I mentioned was the fact that like the absence of the rooster in this instance and only having the hens feels like this more new era approach to it, where there's this dilemma of like chicken eggs or chicken meat. And Nicholas has a good question here. Chickens, bad tribe reward or worst tribe reward? What do you think?
An argument at best and a pet at worst. I like the chickens. I think you should kill one right off the bat because you need that just energy boost for something, or kill it tomorrow, like when you might be, or before a challenge, you know, like maybe wait it out till like a day where you know you're going to be burning calories and kill a chicken. So it used to be like every 3 days you do a challenge or like every day and a half, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your benchmarks on where you should maybe kill a chicken. But it is also a good morale boost on the island when you are starving. Like, some people might not look at that as just food. They might look at it as a companion where it's a pet, and it could like boost morale. Like, and you know, oh, I have my daily task instead of get wood. It's like feed the chicken. And, you know, it's just a different, it's something else on the island.
That's a really good point. And I never really considered that of like, when you talk to survivors, they tell you like how boring Survivor is a lot of the time, right? Like, yes, there's the social strategy aspect of the game and there's the challenges and all that. But have you ever tried filling 24 hours when there's nothing to do? Like, it's a lot. And especially when you can't sleep, right? Like, you have to remember these people are barely sleeping. So because of that, the mundane activity of feeding chickens, caring to the chickens and stuff could actually be a massive savior to someone's mental psyche.
Yeah, I mean, I have fish at home, and, like, that's a pretty boring pet. But I could stand in front of the tank, sit and watch them for hours. Like, to be able to, like, sit and watch a chicken, it could be fun. It could be a, like your own little form of TV too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think in regards to your question, Nicholas, I don't think this is a, I definitely don't think it's the worst tribe reward. I'd have to think really hard to figure out exactly what, maybe it was, no, I have to think really hard about what the worst tribe reward we've ever had is.
It's not the worst, but it's not great. Just a fridge full of Coke.
Yeah, that actually, you know what? That is pretty bad. Although it came in a fridge, which is really convenient. But I think one of the things is, I think one of the big things with the chicken is, and maybe in the new era it changes, but like, because we don't have swaps that often, do you want to give your competitors chickens? Or just like the say of chickens if you don't have swaps? And like keeping in mind that we think there's a swap coming next week. So if that's the case, isn't the best thing just to eat these chickens right away?
Yeah. I mean, you won it, you did the work. You know, there is that.
But I think like that's again part of the reason why Survivor gives them live chickens. I think a lot of it comes down to this idea of like, we are giving this decision to you. You as a tribe need to decide how you're going to deal with this. The entire point is like Nicholas said, like it's an argument at best and a pet at worst. I think the whole purpose of this is to cause an argument. That's the entire like purpose.
A reward with a twist.
Yeah. Right. Like the entire idea is to do that. And like you see it anytime chickens are involved in reality TV, right? There's always an argument about whether or not you should do it. What's the ethical and moral stance you take on it? And it's exasperated in Survivor because you're starving as well.
Yeah. All right. We moving on to our outlast moment.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. This outlast moment kind of really stood out to me while watching the episode. And it's basically normalizing crying in Survivor, where Sue was like all afraid because she was like, I was just crying. And then Gabe was just like, oh, I cried this morning, NBD. Like it's now, and she was like, oh, like you did? And it's now become okay and like not the end of the world that you're crying, because everyone realizes it's a natural form of like expressing just what is pent up in your body. You might not even be sad. You might not be frustrated, but you just need to cry.
Yeah, I think we as a society have kind of just changed our opinion on crying in general. And I think that's a big thing that changes the way we look at crying. And I think when we look at like the typical people we see crying on Survivor, I think for a long time, and this kind of leads into what I want to talk about for my outlast, and it's not so much a moment, but it's just more like a character archetype. And it's like the crying mom who gets like overly emotional from being away from like the family and things like that. Someone like Lisa Welchel or Dawn, and just how those characters are portrayed in an edit and how it's kind of seen as a negative a lot of the time. It's like, oh well, we don't really want them just crying and stuff, like we don't want them to be able to do that, like what are they getting out of it? It's like they're just going to get sympathy, and that's not good in the end of this social game, where if people get sympathy, that could means they get sympathy votes, and votes are very important in this game. So I think leading up to, and this is like those like dark ages of Survivor, those middle seasons that were about like 15 to 10 years ago now. That is a weird thing to say, but when we look at it that way, it's this era really kind of cemented this idea of like those who cry are weak, right? And like we kind of had that in early Survivor as well, but it was really more predominant in these middle seasons, where this idea of like weakness coming from crying. And even if you look at like Dawn and Karamoan, like the big one where we see Dawn crying in Karamoan, of course, is like when she loses her teeth and is going to quit and Brenda has to help her. And I think that's like the big stigma attached to crying in these seasons. This idea that like crying is a, for lack of a better term, like cry for help. And like, you need someone to come in and be the savior. And I think we're going to a point now with 47. And I mean, I think we saw it last season with 46 as well. Like, we're getting to a point where people are like, no, crying's just a thing people do.
Yeah. And you mentioned Lisa Welchel, like, she was looked at as just like kind of a blubbering mess. And then she gets to final tribal council and gets like crapped on for crying. And it's like, she was just dealing with what the game of Survivor is through her emotions. So it's like, why are we saying she's less of a Survivor player because she cried? So like, if Sue gets to the final tribal council, like, and she does have more episodes of crying, like, I feel like it would be looked at less like Lisa.
I feel like in the 12 years since Philippines aired, we have just kind of gotten to a point now where emotional regulation is a lot more prominent in our society. I think we just gotten to a point where we've kind of progressed as a society to think, you know what, emotional regulation is so important, and crying is emotional regulation. And like, yeah, there are some people who cry in situations where it might not seem logical to you. However, that regulation of emotions really helps reinforce things for that person, right? Like, I mean, I'll admit it, I'm a crier. Man, the amount of movies you can put on and I will just burst into tears for is a substantially long list. Like, and it's just one of those things where it's like, it is a relieving thing. It's a way of releasing the emotions that I'm feeling in that moment. So when you see someone do that on the island, it's not a surprise. Survivor can be incredibly overwhelming. And I think it's very interesting when we see, like, Sue come out as, like, Sue is trying to portray herself as this really strong 45-year-old woman, apparently, because everyone's supposed to be 45 and not 58. And, you know, it's kind of shocking, but the way it's edited is so much different, too. Like, Nicholas is mentioning Hannah Shapiro here, right? So Hannah had the same issue. I heard it explained as something like, it's hard to support someone through what looks like an emotional breakdown, have them vote you out, then give them credit for it. And I mean, even like if we look at like David versus Goliath, right? Like Gabby kind of had the same issue in that season. And a lot of it comes down to this fact that like, I think, and those seasons are more recent too. I think it's just like, we're getting a better understanding of mental health and we understand that crying is a good thing now, which is why I think we see this response from like Kyle and Gabe to Sue, like very differently than we would even 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, even that the guys, this is where I'm going to go now for my moment. And the guys, Kyle, you know, Gabe saying, I cried. I've been emotional. Like, these are something that didn't really happen with the men in this situation, where like we see Heroes versus Villains Coach crying to Tyson, and Tyson is like kind of being like, Coach, buck up, like be a man, and like it's okay to cry. So and then we see like Adam and Jay are having a really personal moment together on the hammock, and like they pull the buffs down so nobody sees them crying. Granted, it is a personal conversation, so and that nobody wanted, they yep. both didn't want others to know about either, but it's still like keeping these emotions inside and hidden. As a man, you're looked at as like weak, or you know, just like, I don't know, something to be made fun of, which I loved Gabe being like, oh no, I cried this morning.
Yeah. And I think that's like this progression that we've had in society, because if we go back to 2010 when Heroes versus Villains was airing, right? Like even that, and like, again, it was like 14 years ago. That was still a time where this like idea of like this idea of what a man should be and how they should be portrayed didn't involve crying, right? And like this emotional regulation that I've been talking about wasn't openly practiced or preached by a lot of men. And it's because of like, you know, decades and decades of this idea that men don't cry. They don't show their emotions unless it's anger, right? So because of that, it kind of led to this like toxic masculinity, and it played out really nicely in these old episodes of Survivor because we got to see these moments of like people breaking down and like shirking past that. It's like, I know I shouldn't be crying, but I just have to. And it's unfortunate that those moments couldn't go a bit further, like we do see in this week's episode of 47, because that stigma was still attached to it back then. And it's so nice to see now we do have men being like, just cry, like, whatever, who cares? I'm going to do it too. And just like breaking down that stigma so that people can just take care of themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're out on the island at one point, it's okay to cry.
Even if you're not on the island, if you're at home right now and you're listening to us and you want to cry, totally fine.
John and I've got shoulders. Yeah, so that has been our show this week. So remember, become a patron for tomorrow. We'll be talking Quick on the Draw, which is episode 6 of Winners at War, and how this ties into this episode of 47. John, what is going on in this specialist universe?
Lots going on. Of course, I mean, listen to Phil and Will break down this episode from Wednesday if you haven't already. It's a fantastic recap. They're gushing about the episode. Listen to Digging Deeper yesterday. Phil and Blake dive even further into the episode. McKenna and Blake are almost done covering Big Brother. They cover the eviction, the final four eviction. The final four eviction last night. They have that end of season or after the finale episode coming later this week. What day is that on, McKenna?
Sunday.
All right. On Sunday, they will be
right after the live finale. We'll be coming at you with our hot takes on the winner, aka Chelsea, most likely.
This past Monday, Phil and I talked our top 10 underrated horror films. That was a really fun podcast with some really fantastic movies. So if you like horror movies, check that out. Some really good recommendations there. On Monday, Phil is going to be doing the Predictions of Power rankings with Bruce Perot. You know, we love Bruce here at The Specialist, and we're happy to have him back. He'll be joining Phil Monday night to go through that. Just earlier today, Phil and Blake broke down the first two episodes of House of Villains, so make sure you check that out. And just so everyone knows, Ken and I are away next week, so the rewind will be pushed a little bit further. It'll be on Monday the 21st instead of our usual Friday time slot. The Patreon episode will come out after that as well, so don't be scared. Make sure you head over to the Patreon because so much is going on there. As always, there's casting perspectives coming out from Phil and Blake. $5 Tuesdays, all horror movies all month. Obviously, it's October. We have to talk horror movies. There's no exceptions there. Every Season Matters. The guys just wrapped up Palau and are moving on to Guatemala. The first Guatemala episode just dropped yesterday. Obviously, this is Phil's after show for the top tier patrons. And Phil is really making his way through Australian Survivor, so you got to check that out too. And then, of course, you get to listen to us for the rewind where we're talking Winners of War this week.
Yes. So. All right. We will see you over on the Patreon tomorrow, everyone. And then next Monday for another Survivor rewind. Goodbye.